Hear, hear with Sean Dilley on Audio Boo.
They say this is the age of austerity, and with financial hardship on the rise, it's perhaps little surprise that more and more people are turning to short-term financiers. Hello, my name's Sean Dilley, and this is Hear Hear, the programme that takes a look at the world of politics and current affairs as they affect real people. This week, payday lending.
We look like fertile territory for them because without a cap on the cost of credit, they can charge what they want and they can make a lot of money, and a lot of them do make a lot of money.
Hear, hear with Sean Dilley on Audio Boo.
Well, the cost of living is a huge issue for politicians of all political hues, with rising costs of fuel and heating probably the utmost cost in the average household. Little wonder then that more and more people are turning to payday loan companies to get through their short period of hardship. But is it a short period? Later, we'll hear from the debt charity Step Change.
These are short-term loans. If they can't repay it after the first month, it will just roll over and they'll incur a very high charge. So they mightn't actually realise that they're in trouble.
And from Richard Griffiths from the Consumer Finance Association.
For a short-term loan, an annual percentage rate is not relevant.
Later, we'll be chatting with Carl Packman, the author of Loan Sharks, The Rise and Rise of Payday Lending.
We can't just tackle the payday lending industry. We've got to look at how they've taken root.
But in studio, our guest of the week, and it has to be said, voice of reason, I hope anyway, is Ian Dunt, the editor of politics.co.uk.
Nobody has ever called me that before.
Have they not?
No, it's pretty much the first time.
Okay, well, Ian, this is a huge issue for people generally, and for politicians, of course, because, you know, the evidence is very much pointing to the fact that more of us are borrowing and using these payday loan companies, and surely that's something you only do if you are a little bit short.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, really, this comes from people who basically can't get credit any other way. They're basically people who've been frozen out in terms of credit. And so they're going in for deals which are really quite brutal. These are deals that will throw you into an extraordinary amount of hardship if you don't pay it back very, very quickly.
Well, surprisingly, actually, and we've got some statistics on this one, it seems that although the payday lending industry say, well, they're for short loans for up to a month, looking at last year's figures, for instance, from the leading 50 suppliers, over 50% or around the 50% mark, it should be said, of their income comes from people who have rolled their loans over.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're very fond of pointing to the fact that most people pay back quite promptly, pay about 25 quid on 100 quid that they take out over about 30 days. What they don't tell you is that up to half of their income comes from this minority of people who don't.
And 20% of their income comes from people who roll it four times or more. Isn't that shocking?
That's absolutely shocking.
Isn't that
indeed
shocking?
And also, of course, what they also refuse to mention is that the pretty aggressive enforcement tactics they have when they try to get this money back.
I know you sound like the Office of Fair Trading, and I think for fair reporting, maybe we should have a little bit of background. The Office of Fair Trading have come out with a report on the whole industry, haven't they, Ian?
Extremely damning report. Actually, quite undiplomatic language for the OFT to be using. They've given it about 12 weeks to get their houses in order. Or really, the way it's looking is they're going to start demanding, A, the Competition Commission gets involved, and really we are looking at a critical mass with calls for regulation, possibly even legislation of the industry.
Well, that's going to be very interesting, of course, because once upon a time, the consumer laws in the UK kind of had a cap of about just under 50% of maximum APR interest, and that's the annual percentage rate. Now, the most recent Consumer Credit Act, as I understand it, removed that, so there's no limit at all. And what we have here is almost sort of America sneezed and the UK's got the cold, whereas America have kind of closed many of those loopholes, as we'll hear later from Carl Packman, who's written the Loan Shark book. We've taken it on board, and essentially we've got the unregulated face of payday lending.
Yeah, that's right. And I think probably when regulation does come in, and at the moment, I have to say, I think it's a matter of when rather than if. It will probably take that form. The interesting thing in the OFT report, what made the most impact on me, was when they're actually saying these guys are competing on ease and speed of getting the loan. When your competition is that, you don't check the financial situation of the person getting the loan. You don't check how many other short-term loans they've got. Really, the only thing that you're competing on is how hard can you hit them on interest rates.
I think just on interest rates and in the interest of fairness, we should point out APR, that's the annual percentage rate of interest, so that if you borrowed an amount of money, that's what you'd pay if it went over the period of a year. These loans, they typically don't do that. They just simply don't. But if you're looking at maybe, I think it was looking at... I went onto the Wonga site and they're interesting. They claim not to be a payday lender. but I'm serious as well. They say they're not a payday lender, such as the testimony, if you like, of the toxicity.
What's their basis for that?
They say, well, people don't necessarily have... You know, it's not... People pay earlier. It's not necessarily out there pay or something. But it goes to testify as to the toxicity of the branding of payday lending. As to the fact that a company that, frankly, in the perceptions of the man on the Clapham omnibus, they're payday lenders, but they're not, because I'm not quite sure.
I mean, probably they know. I mean, through the stuff that Stella Creasy is doing and the increased pressure in Westminster, they are starting to become toxic.
Well, but Stella's spoken on this. In fact, as a matter of fact, we'll take a listen now to Stella Creasy speaking to The Guardian as she talks exactly about companies like Wonga.
It's very clear that a lot of these companies, like Wonga, like Bright House, like The Money Shop, are trying to promote a veneer of respectability to what they do, are trying to say that they're lending to the Facebook generation, that this is a new form of credit and that people like me don't really understand it. My problem is I understand all too well the consequences of lending to people on very low incomes at very high rates of interest.
Well, the invitation was made. I think if Wonga would like to make a comment, you can go to hearhearshow.co.uk to find out how you get involved after the fact, which is a bit of a shame, to be honest. But to reiterate, they say they are not a payday loan company. You might think that. I couldn't possibly comment.
Like Wonga.
Let's hear now from the debt charity Step Change. Here is Una Farrell.
Overall, we've seen a massive rise in people coming to us who have payday loans and who are struggling with them. And the amount people are owing is going up. In 2009, it was 1,138, whereas last year it had gone up to 1,657. And that's more than the monthly take-home pay of our average client. So that sort of puts it in context.
Well, let me play devil's advocate and suggest there are now maybe more payday lenders than ever before and more financial issues than there were maybe in 2009 for people who've lost their jobs and the like.
Well, certainly, it's a growing market, and they're realising, you know, as people are struggling in the downturn, that a lot of money can be made from these people, and I think that's why we've had such a growth in the industry.
Would you oppose the use of payday lenders under all circumstances, or is it something that you think can be useful for people?
I don't know if you'd use the word useful. I mean, it's always good that people have as much choice as possible when it comes to how they borrow. But I personally wouldn't ever recommend someone to use them. I would, first of all, you should always try and use whatever money you have, and you know, if you've got savings or if you're even possibly borrowing from a friend. But if you do want to use credit, financial services, I would say go for, if you've got an overdraft, go for that, or even use a credit card. The problem with payday loans is they spiral very quickly, and they're also just very, very expensive.
Is it fair to assume then, if someone is in a position where they're using payday lending companies, that they're actually already in financial trouble and perhaps need help?
Not necessarily so, but I think they could find themselves in financial trouble very, very quickly.
What would your advice be then to anybody who's had an issue with a payday lender? They've borrowed money for whatever reason. They can't pay it back. They're in trouble. What do they do?
Well, the problem is if they can't repay it, because these are short-term loans, if they can't repay it after the first month, it will just roll over and they'll incur a very high charge. So they mightn't actually realise that they're in trouble. So I'd say as soon as you've taken out a payday loan and you can't repay it after that month, I think you really need to seek help from a charity such as Step Change.
OK, Step Change, of course, being formerly it was the Consumer Credit Counselling Service. Right. It's a charity, it's free of charge.
Yeah.
And if listeners to Hear Here think maybe they need to get in touch, how do they contact you?
They can contact us on our helpline, which is 0800 138 1111.
You're listening to Hear Here with Sean Dilley on Audio Boo.
I think, Ian, it's slightly sort of indicative of a fairly dire financial situation, at least to maybe some would argue the less well-off in society, that people are needing to use these services. I mean, do you hear that? A huge increase in the casework that's going to debt charities.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is I think very few people who have access to more overdraft or to a credit card are going to be using this service. This is kind of where the catch-22 is. This is for people who actually don't have access to credit in any other way. So when we talk about regulating the industry more, when we say, for instance, you know, you need to be doing more checks on how many of these short-term loans they have, what that could easily result in is these people being frozen out of credit altogether. And that puts them at risk of going to gangs. It puts them at risk of crippling poverty. It carries all sorts of other prices. So we do have to be careful how we tinker with the system.
Well, it's a shocking amount of people who don't have access to bank accounts. And we'll hear from Carl Packman, author of Loan Sharks, on that, because he's got some very interesting statistics on it. But, you know, we hear all the time the squeezed middle, don't we, particularly from Ed Miliband. I can't work out, we're both parliamentary lobby journalists, I've tried to work out what the squeezed middle is, and as far as I'm concerned, it seems to be anybody who owns more than a pound and under 10 million. Who are the squeezed middle?
Well, this is
I don't understand.
This is, you know, what a useful political phrase is that it's so vague that almost anyone
politics.
Could consider them part of it. I mean, you know, almost everyone thinks that they're middle class, or you could have pretty poor people think they're middle class, and some extremely wealthy people think they're middle class. So, and they all feel a bit squeezed, and so, you know, it's a kind of term that it can be quite inclusive, everyone feels part of it. I do think that he's onto something, though. I actually think that the way to do the politics of a depression, which is really what we're in right now, is to start pointing at people and going, are you richer than you were 5 years ago? So in terms of him getting into Downing Street in 2015, I actually think squeezed middle is something he should be focusing on rather more than he is already.
Well, this week gone, the Liberal Democrats made great hay about pay packets being slightly bigger in terms of the tax threshold and the tax allowance being raised. A key Liberal Democrat pledge, of course, to raise the income tax threshold to £10,000. But are people better off financially when you compare that to, say, fuel prices and the cost of eating and even heating?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look over the last 3 years, there has been some increase in average pay. But when you compare it against inflation, you're actually looking at a 2% actual cut over the last 3 years.
But also, we bear in mind that obviously by the nature of payday loans, they generally tend to be payday, but there are lenders who will lend to, frankly, anybody. And to a degree, it could at least be argued that, you know, the people, not even argued, there is evidence that people who are likely to use it are in the lower socioeconomic brackets of society, people who can afford it the least.
Absolutely. So look, here it is. There are millions who just about get by, but it's the little random chaos of life. Your washing machine breaks down, or there's a scratch in the car or something. That's the stuff that completely sinks you. These are people, you know, who might even have an overdraft and have used it to the full extent that they can. When they get paid, their bank account goes back up to zero and then goes all the way down to the limit of their overdraft again. And when something goes wrong, that's when they have to take out these kinds of loans.
Well, the consultation on payday lending for the Treasury closed on Wednesday. And the question has to be asked, do you think that it's time for legislation?
You know, you don't have to have your ear to the ground very far to recognise that there is a momentum, a sense of critical mass building for action on this. There was a voluntary code that they signed up to last November. April 2014, Financial Conduct Authority actually takes over. It has a remit over this. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, between those two, like we say, they've got a 12-week deadline for them to clean up their act. And if not, then the Competition Commission is going to look into them. So already we're getting a sense of something's going to happen.
Well, here's Ian Dunt, editor of politics.co.uk. Have you got something to say on this? Why not get over to the spanking new website, hearhearshow.co.uk, to get involved in this debate. Now, it has to be said, everybody from debt charities, everybody we've spoken to in researching today's programme, nobody's really said you should never use these companies in any circumstances, but it does seem to be kind of checks and balances. But the term loan shark is bandied about by the antis, something I put to Richard Griffiths, a spokesman for a trade association for 70% of payday lenders. That's the Consumer Finance Association.
Well, I understand why that term's levelled at some of the industry, but actually the lion's share of the industry, and certainly the CFA and its members, are working very hard to raise standards, to listen to concerns of the government and the regulators, and put in place a number of measures to protect consumers and to raise their standards across the industry.
Do you recognise, however, I mean, you represent around 70% of all payday lenders, that you get more than your Arthur Daly types out there?
Well, what you do find is there is a mix of lenders out there, and it's important for consumers to differentiate between those. You want to go, if you're going to give somebody your details, you want to give them to a company that's reputable and responsible and that's going to look after you, including if after you've taken a loan, you get into financial difficulty. How are they going to treat you then? Have they checked out your credit worthiness and your affordability to start with? Are they trying to lure you in with claims of fast and easy money with no checks attached to it because they think that will attract more people?
Yeah, so as you're saying, it's about effectively transparency.
Absolutely. It's about transparency. The customers know what they're signing up to, and they know how the whole loan's going to work, how much they'll have to pay back. And then what will happen actually if they can't pay back, and how will they be treated, and what are their routes of kind of redress at that point?
I understand, as we've been chatting about in the programme earlier actually, the subject of APR, annual percentage rate of interest, is controversial for payday lenders.
Well, APR is a standard measure which is used across all forms of consumer credit. And as responsible lenders, our members will always quote that where they have to. But what we prefer to do is to quote that, but also tell customers in pounds and pence exactly how much they're borrowing, how much they're going to pay back, and if there are any extra fees that might apply if they happen to miss the payment, so that they really understand in pounds and pence terms exactly how much that's going to cost them. It's much clearer to them than some kind of complicated percentage rate.
Hear, hear with Sean Dilley on Audio Boo.
Some interesting words there from Richard Griffiths. Ian Dunt, editor of politics.co.uk, still with us. He's got a fair point there, hasn't he, Ian?
Yeah, and he made a pretty good shift of justifying himself. However, you know, if he's talking about a voluntary code of practice and transparency at the same time, transparency on what happens to the customer if they fail to pay back the money, he must be living in dreamland. There is no company on earth which voluntarily starts going on about the negative aspects of what it does. For that, you need regulation.
Legislation, do you not?
Yeah, probably.
But isn't the problem? I mean, there doesn't seem to be an awful lot of teeth to the voluntary code. It has to be said, most of the Office of Fair Trading's report was put together before this voluntary code came into place, to be fair, because data takes a while to collect. But nevertheless, one thing, unfortunately, the Consumer Finance Association can't say is that their members aren't affected by this, because the OFT report actually makes a damning criticism that there's widespread evidence, much more so that couldn't be described as a few rogue and rotten apples. Do you see what I mean?
I mean, they specifically say this is not rotten apples territory, don't they?
They also say that they're surprised that they're members of trade associations. So one of the things, just chatting with Richard the other day, actually, he said, well, just make sure, see if they're a member of a trade association. Well, actually, according to the OFT report, you know, there's an issue here that needs to be fixed. Yeah. Anyway, it's a subject that's going to get everybody a little bit hot under the collar. James O'Malley from Audio Boo has been taking a listen through to some of your comments.
Have I got booze for you?
It's certainly proved a controversial topic, Sean. Lou Walker has booed in to say that she thinks that people have some better options than to use payday lenders.
Really, if people can't manage with their money, maybe the best thing is to try and get some savings advice from the local banks, or sit and have a look at ways of budgeting, because that will always turn out to be the long-term cheap option.
Claire Randall has some mixed views on the topic. She thinks, on the one hand, there is a need for this sort of lending.
A lot of the people that borrow from these payday loan companies, these quick fix loan companies, are people who don't have credit ratings for whatever reason. Generally, people don't go to a quick fix loan company just because they want to go out and buy a new car.
On the other hand, she does take issue with how these companies advertise themselves.
It's done very aggressively. It's done in quite an emotive way. You know, loads of these kind of adverts I see during the day on daytime television. They're not on primetime TV between Coronation Street and X Factor or whatever. They're on during daytime.
Hear, hear with Sean Dilley on Audio Boo. Sign up for your free account now.
And you can find out how to do just that, or get involved with the show at hearhearshow.co.uk. If you like the show, give it a mention on Facebook, give it a mention on Twitter, help us spread the brand. Now, payday lending, it's something which attracts quite a bit of opprobrium from all quarters, including authors, it has to be said. I'm joined now in the studio, or we're joined, I should say, because we've still got Ian Dunt over there the corner. But the literal squeezed middle guest today is Carl Packman. He's the author of Loan Sharks, The Rise and Rise of Payday Lending.
Hello.
What sort of gave you the impetus to write this particular book?
OK, well, at the time of beginning to research this thing, this new phenomena, I was living in Kilburn in northwest London, and Kilburn was something of the face of the recession. So it used to be on sort of news reports every night of all these shops closing down. And it seemed that overnight, from having sort of Currys, you know, these kinds of places, when I was, you know, getting the bus down the middle of the high street, there was these great big lit up places selling loans really expensively. Mm-hmm. These were the only places that are open at night. They had balloons outside of them. It looked very strange. So because I didn't know what they were,
Of course, you're kind of curious. But we should explain for people who don't know London, Kilburn actually is an incredibly run-down area. But it's right near... I mean, everybody describes themselves in Kilburn normally as Maid of Vale because they think it sounds posh.
Yeah.
But actually, you really do get, in the area you mentioned, you really do get a total mix of socio-economic classes, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So there was. There was... If you the closer you went up to Maid of Vale, the more class it went. But I was kind of closer to Cricklewood and that sort of area, and it was... Yeah, it
most
was,
people still say Maid of Vale. Ian, you were mentioning earlier about access to credit, weren't you?
Yeah, I thought that was actually very interesting, and you mentioned this in your book for quite a long time. This idea that there's basically a section of society which, you know, apart from this, has no access to credit, and that's how this industry has sort of sprung up. So then the question is, you know, what happens if we start regulating the industry? Are we basically just getting rid of any access to credit for these people altogether?
Well, it can't happen on its own. We can't just tackle the payday lending industry. We've got to look at how they've taken root. To look at banking lending, because lending from banks and mainstream credit has taken a fall, taken a great big drop, which means it's not just the lowest strata or the working class or the lowest class people. It's, you know, there are middle class people as well.
Businesses can't. And of course, you know, in Westminster we see all the time, don't we, and the notion of there's not enough cash flowing and people are going under as a result. But even domestically, Carl, you were talking, how many people is it who don't have access to a mainstream account?
1.9 million people without access to basic banking facilities in this country, but it's upwards of 9 million people who have no access to mainstream credit facilities.
Stella Creasy, chatting with her, she says that her real issue is that there's this kind of veneer of respectability. Is that something we're going to see more of, or do you even accept that premise?
The veneer of respectability, I suppose that they're always going to try. So you get trade bodies like the Consumer Finance Association, and they're a trade body for the payday lending industry.
70% of them.
Yeah, they've got the largest share. And they are all the time trying to get themselves, you know, on the news a lot, in the press, to conferences, you know, credit conferences and things like that, to say this is a respectable type of credit. But the facts don't back that up, frankly.
Because how do they behave when people can't pay them back?
Well, this is what's under investigation by the Office for Fair Trading at the moment. So although they say you can ring us up, we're very reasonable and things like that, the testimonies to that are that you get phone calls to employers, to begging people to pay back money and go into
aggressive
straight
debt collecting, as it's called in the report, and they've got this 12-week period, which we're well into now, by the way.
Well, there's a whole problem around that at the moment, because the Office of Fair Trading released their report at the beginning of March to say that they had 12 weeks. Not all the letters. When I spoke to them in the middle of March, they said that they wanted all the letters to go out by Easter, and then we have a report by the Guardian last week to say that not all the letters have gone out now. And even when I spoke to them, they said there's that 12-week period for businesses, for payday lenders, to clean up their act. And after that, there has to be another sort of a test, you know, to see if they have...
Well, what we'll do, we'll contact the Office of Fair Trading and we'll put their response on here, show.co.uk. Just in terms of your personal view now, what's the solution? Is it a cap? Is it legislation? What do we do to make this right?
I think there needs to be a whole host of measures taken. So that includes a cap on the total cost of credit. So it's interesting to tell the difference between an interest rate cap and a total cost of credit cap.
That might be one solution. But you mentioned the total the total repayment, as it were. The industry themselves say that they are unfairly treated by UK law as it is, that they have to publish an annual percentage rate of interest. Now, I note, obviously, that 20% of income, roughly just under, based on last year's figures, came from people who'd rolled over for 4 months or even more. But, you know, people aren't borrowing for a year, are they?
No, that's true. They're not, no. So the APR, the annualised percentage rate, gives you an idea of a loan if it was to be live for 1 year. But we know that they're short-term loans.
It's not representative, really, is
no,
it? And that's
no.
the problem. So it's, you know, it's fine to kick the industry where they get it wrong.
Absolutely.
But surely we have to acknowledge that, you know, it's carrots and sticks.
Well, I think, personally, we should be saying they should be made to advertise how much
you know,
the total cost
loan.
Of repayment, as Wong would argue, but since they're not a payday loan company, I guess it's not relevant.
No, of course not.
Absolutely.
And they wouldn't be here to explain themselves.
Absolutely. But no, I'm sorry, guys, if you're listening, you deserve this.
No, I think so. Yeah, if they are listening, yes, you do.
Oh, they'll listen. Believe me, they'll listen. Right, OK, it's Carl Packman. The book is Loan Sharks, The Rise and Rise of Payday Lending. How can people get hold of the book?
Well, you can go on Amazon or Waterstones, or go on the publisher's website, which is Search in Finance, and that's searchinfinance.com.
Hear, hear, with Sean Dilley on Audio Boo.
A cracking read by Carl Packman, it really is. Believe me, I've got it all iPadded up, Ian. I think the clear message there is that we're not talking about a few rogue traders, Del Boy traders, if you like. The OFT report says that really it's borrowers beware. And I think interesting words from Richard Griffiths from the Leading Trade Association there, saying just ask the right questions. Away from payday lending now, just to finish up with a couple of issues you've spotted from the world of politics and news over the last week, Ian.
Yeah, I mean, you know, week dominated really by sort of chatter around UKIP and local elections, but I thought the thing that really stood out was actually what happened with Ed Miliband this week. So we saw the two faces. We saw the worst face that he's got, and we saw the best face.
The first was the World at One, or Watto, as we call it in the
Watto,
industry.
Watto, indeed. So he does this Radio 4 interview where he's asked, is it not true that if you were in power and you followed these policies, you'd have to borrow more? And he genuinely acted as if he'd never practiced this question before.
Do you
in
think
his own
he didn't know? Or
he must surely be aware of the fact that it involves borrowing more. He's surely aware of the fact that Tories are waiting like dogs on a leash for him to say that he's going to borrow more so they can point to Labour's anarchic handling of the public's purse. And yet his reaction to it was honestly as if he'd never practiced it, as if he'd never considered that someone might ask him this question.
Did you notice the very politician type answer that he gave to one of the questions, incidentally? You can listen to this on Audio Boo, this interview. It's on there under the featured section. But he just said, well, yeah, you can look at the figures differently whether you're talking medium term or not. You're not asked about medium term. You're asked whether you're borrowing more now. Or do you just not want to scream at your radio when they answer questions like that?
The problem as well is all of the polling shows that a majority now, and it's only just happened, a majority of the public are turning against austerity. Mm. They are ready to hear a different message. And it is not beyond the wit of the public to understand an idea that might say, we're going to borrow more in the short term because that means we can borrow less in the medium term. But Labour cannot have a policy which involves borrowing more and yet not be prepared to defend the idea of borrowing more in the short term. They have to, you know, either say, well, we're just going to back the government's entire economic agenda, which makes you think, what is the point of an opposition? Or they have to say, well, we're going to defend our policy. He cannot just be in this halfway house of not defending it. So that was an absolutely disastrous moment for Ed Miliband and on his core weakness. He then had a very good moment when he's out and about doing local election campaigning. He's making Cameron Direct look kind of old hat, really, because he's out and he's
doing... Well, it is old hat, because David Cameron's been doing this now since well before the... the election's Prime Minister. They're now PM Directs. You're quite right that they were the Cameron Directs, but it was pioneering in that sense. But you think almost that it's Cameron the next generation.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, a little bit. I mean, of course, when he first started doing it, you know, it was against Gordon Brown, it looked much more lively, much more dynamic, much more democratic. Even you doing that
my
now
Gordon
still
Brown
sends
impression.
A shiver down my
Does
spine.
It?
I always like politics, not Gordon. Okay.
Nobody can do a Gordon Brown impression. It's odd.
It is incredibly hard. So he has this moment. He's out there on the stump. He's taking questions from the public. And this guy just walks by and starts hurling abuse at him. And most politicians are very, very bad at dealing with these kinds of situations. But actually, Ed Miliband dealt with it very well. He brought him in. He had a conversation with him. Guy was complaining about immigration, saying he hadn't had a job for 20 years, etc. And I mean, he did sort of promise him a job, which, you know, he probably doesn't need to do that to buy everybody's vote.
You can make him a special advisor. That's what politicians do.
There's always room for more spads.
Absolutely. By the way, can we just say spads is the expression for special advisors in Westminster world? Because we do get politicos listening, but we're much wider than that.
Absolutely, yes. And I've given myself a due slap on the wrist. So he left this guy, you know, they shook hands. They seemed to build a relationship. It was the exact opposite of what happened to Gordon Brown when he was on the street, you know, in 2010 general election campaign and got confronted by a woman.
Bigot gate, wasn't it? Caught, by the way, by our guest of the week last week, Sky News' Neil Paterson, who was out and about. But the funny thing about Bigot gate that I always found staggering, he actually dealt with Mrs. Duffy really, really quite well. Got into the car with his radio mic on, she's just a bigoted woman.
That was the incredible thing, wasn't it? That everyone had looked at the exchange and thought, that was your best moment of the campaign so far. Absolutely.
That was like real Gordon Brown. I mean, he was very different interviewing, I found. That whenever interviewing him, I found him to be quite sort of nervous. When you're chatting with him and, you know, he doesn't feel that he's sort of on record in that sense, he was just a bit more laid back and even funny.
Yeah,
it was. Have you ever seen Gordon Brown smile other than that ridiculous one that time?
Yeah, that was that disastrous image.
Quick, Gordon,
smiling.
Smile for God's sake! For God's sake!
Poor old Gordon.
Okay, so there we go. In the words of Porky Pig, that's all, folks. We will be back next week when our guest of the week is—it's not other than Lembitopic, Ian.
Oh, joy.
Hey,
I can't
there's nothing
wait
wrong
to
with a bit of Lembit. There's nothing. No, come on. I tell you what, he is lively. You can agree with him or otherwise.
He has, and he has a very interesting love life.
Don't be cheeky. Anyway, we'll be back next week chatting about freedom of the press. Have the press got out of control in this post-Leveson world? Do they need reining in? Or are you slightly worried that freedom of expression and a free society could suffer without?
Hear, hear, with Sean Dilley on Audio Boo.
Hear, hear is an Audio Boo production. Produced by Dolores William. Engineered by Charlie Brandon King. Special thanks goes to James O'Malley for reporting, creative imaging production by Big Things Media.